over half of the prison population in Madagascar haven't even had a trial.
So, you know, they're just there based on an allegation.
Just there based on an accusation, a complete accusation. And, and you know, the whole idea of innocent until proven guilty doesn't really seem to exist.
Hello and welcome to the Unreported World podcast. I'm Christian Guru Murthy. With me this week is Dashiani Navanayagam, who's been to Madagascar to investigate why so many young girls are being held in prison without trial. Under 18s in Madagascar can be jailed for almost 3 years before going to court. Many will not have a lawyer. Some don't even know what a lawyer is. In numerous cases, they're incarcerated for years without their families even being told that they're there. Dashi went to meet some of the girls behind bars to find out how or if they might ever get back their freedom. Well done, because it's a really gripping story. But the sort of the basic facts of it, that children can be locked up for years, are gobsmacking.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely shocking. Like, you hear about it and you think, how is that possible? And before we left, you know, we spoke to lots of different people and they said, the crimes really are very minor. It's sort of petty theft. And you think, okay, but, you know, how true is that? And then when we turned up, you know, on our first day, we went to the prison in the capital and we met loads of young girls. And, you know, they were being incarcerated for things like literally stealing a bag of rice.
I'm always amazed when journalists actually get into prisons to film. So why did they let you in and what was it like when you were there?
The main reason I think we did get access is their prison system is hugely underfunded. And I think, well, the government recognise that they've got a massive problem. They're underfunding their prisons and they're immensely overcrowded and they can barely afford to feed their prisoners. So actually, a lot of prisons we went to couldn't even afford to give them the basic staples of 3 meals a day. To a certain extent, I think they were hoping that this actually might help generate more help for them or more aid.
Now, your Unreported World film is essentially the story of one girl. Tell us about her.
So we met Sahul in a prison in one of sort of the small kind of towns of Madagascar. When we went in, she'd been there for just over a month.
Do you have a lawyer?
Samana.
I don't.
Do you know what a lawyer is?
I don't know what it is.
She is typical. It's really sad, but she's typical of many young girls, many young children in prison, all young, older, sort of slightly older teens in prison. She comes from a very, very rural background. Her parents are charcoal sellers. It's one of the poorest jobs you can do in Madagascar. She'd never been to school. She can't read or write. And she'd left her home the year before to go and work as a maid for an affluent family. In fact, they'd actually picked her out. She'd sold charcoal to them and they'd offered her the job of coming to work as a maid. Now, this is the other remarkable thing. Before we went, we were told there's lots of young girls who go and work as maids in households. The way it works is that maids are often paid every 6 months or every 12 months. And when it's time to pay them, they get accused of some minor theft.
So in theory, domestic staff get taken on for months at a time, don't get paid, and then when it's time to pay them, they can be accused of a crime and sent off to jail.
Yeah, and you know, and you don't know, I mean, there's no way of knowing whether they did it or not, but the fact remains that, you know, they can be held for, you know, if they're under 18, they can be held for almost 3 years. If they're over 18, they can be held for 4 to 5 years without a trial. So in Sahul's case, she had gone to work for this family. She'd never been paid by them. And then a few months later, they accused her of stealing some perfume and a mobile phone. And she was taken to the local prison in that town. And that's where we found her. What was quite distressing about her case is her parents didn't know that she was in jail.
Why not?
Well, she had no way of contacting them. So she didn't have her own phone. She has no
money.
You
don't get a phone call in prison?
No. No. I mean, you don't get food in prison. I mean, this is the thing. You know, a lot of the people in that prison were having their meals delivered to them by family members. And, you know, we thought, oh, that's, you know, it's odd. You know, you've got this young girl in prison here for at least a month, potentially could be here for years before a trial. Why is no one doing anything? And it turned out that in this prison, there was a woman working there and her job is to deal with the younger women in the prison. And when I asked her, you know, how is it that this girl is here without her parents knowing? And she said, you know, I'm not funded to tell their parents, you know. So if they're local girls and their parents live nearby, I can go and visit them and I'll often pay for it out of my own money. But her parents live miles away. They live in rural Madagascar, it's absolutely impossible for me to get there. But she did want to go and find Sahul's parents, and we offered to go with her. And we embarked on this like mad journey. So we actually attempted twice to get to her parents. So the first time we left and we drove for about 3 to 4 hours, and then the roads just got too bad for us to pass, and it was nighttime and our driver thought it was too dangerous to continue. So the next day we tried again and we left really early. And again, we drove for about 4 to 5 hours, and then the roads just became too difficult. And, you know, everyone was saying to us, look, turn back, turn back. But this prison worker said, it's possible we can still carry on walking. And hopefully we can either hitch a ride with a car that's managed to get through this, or a cattle cart. So let's just try. But, you know, she warned us that, one, there was no guarantee we would find her parents in this village. And two, even if we did find them, the shame and stigma of being in prison has meant that a lot of parents do turn away from their kids and disown them. But at the same time, for a lot of people in prison, your only way out is really if you've got someone on the outside helping you who can get you a lawyer, who can raise the money, or at least try and give you food. And that's actually one of her concerns about Sahul. No one was coming to bring her food. Anyway, we managed to make it to the nearest town to their village. And it just so happened, it was pure luck that it was market day at this place. And everyone comes from all the surrounding small villages, and her parents were there selling charcoal. And so that's where we met them. And Funi, the prison worker, sort of broke the news to them about where Sahul was. That was very emotional because they had no idea. And they said that they'd started to have quite severe worries because they'd been calling. They'd managed to sort of borrow a phone. Well, they didn't think she disappeared, but they'd managed to borrow a phone from someone in their village, and they would call this doctor and ask to speak to her. And they'd called several times in the last month, and every time they'd been told, she's at market, or she's sleeping, or she's not here, but she'll call you back. And they'd just never been able to get hold of her. And they said that they thought, you know, that was all a bit odd. And they were devastated to find out that she was in prison. But, you know, straight away, there was kind of no question about whether they were disowning her or not. They wanted to go, they wanted to see their daughter. So they made the journey back with us to the prison, and we went back to see Sahul. And again, you know, it's really brutal. These are very young girls in prison, but that's not taken into account. So the parents turn up and they only get 15 minutes.
And it's through a grill.
It's through iron bars, yeah.
It's a very heartrending scene that you've filmed. I mean, with this girl sort of pushing her fingers through the grills of prison bars to touch her mother.
Are you okay? Don't cry. What happened?
They said I was stealing. I didn't steal anything.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the hardest scenes to film, because you're aware that so much has happened to them. You know, 24 hours ago, they're in this village selling charcoal, hoping that their daughter's okay and thinking that she probably is. Then they find out that she's not, and then they get this 15 minutes and she's led in by a guard. And then at the end of 15 minutes, you know, they ring a bell and someone literally pulls her away back into the cell.
And they would normally be pretty powerless in this situation, wouldn't they? Because they're a pretty poor family.
They're a very poor family. And actually, that was one of the things on the journey back they kept saying to us is, we don't know the justice system. We have no idea what to do. And they were asking us for help. They were asking Funi, the prison worker who came with us, for help. And, you know, one of the things that she said is a lot of the time, the only way to sort of get out of prison is often if you can hire a lawyer, which is really expensive, or a lot of people bribe their way out. But if you don't have the money to do that, then you really are just stuck there until a trial happens. And so actually, overwhelmingly, a lot of the people we spoke to in prison did come from incredibly poor backgrounds.
And then I suppose because you were there, you were able to take on their case to some extent and go and see the employer, the doctor.
Yes. So that was a bit of a kind of twist, I suppose. Unbeknownst to us, they, again, had borrowed a phone and called the doctor whilst they'd been standing out of prison and asked to speak to their daughter.
We just called the doctor, who told us Sahul is in church. She's obviously lying, because the child's in prison.
And so we turned up to go and see the doctor, and the parents confronted her about why Sahul's in prison. And, you know, the first thing they wanted to know when they turned up to this doctor's house was why they'd never been told where their daughter was.
I told Sahul, let's tell your parents. She said, I'd kill myself if you tell them.
Don't be such a smooth talker, doctor. I don't believe you.
What the whole thing highlighted to me, I suppose, as an observer watching it, was just the complete inequality between the two families. You had a very well-educated, wealthy family, and then you had a family who were kind of at the mercy of not just the justice system, but also at the mercy of this family.
And so what has happened since?
So she's still there. She's still there. There is some confusion about her age. So when we were there, she told us that she was 17. We now believe that actually she may have got that wrong and she might be 18, possibly 19, which will actually make her case even harder because she's then no longer seen as a child. So she could be held for even longer, 4 to 5 years in prison without a trial. Her parents still visit her sort of every 1 to 2 weeks and are trying to raise the money. They are being assisted by Amnesty, but the case is still ongoing and there's no guarantee that she'll get out anytime soon.
Well, thank you very much. It's a fascinating watch. Thank you for listening. You can watch Girls Behind Bars on All4, or you can watch it over on the Unreported World YouTube channel. Until next time, bye-bye.